Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to another Health, Wealth, and Wisdom podcast episode. I am here again today with Coach Lauren for a Q&A podcast. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm good, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm okay. My husband last night told me I sound absolutely terrible. So hopefully my little cold upper respiratory thing is not translating into our podcast audio. But you know what? I'm feeling okay. I feel better than I sound, perhaps.
Well, that's good. That's good. We've gotten pretty lucky over here and have avoided any major sicknesses yet. We got all vaccinated the other day, so we're just going to keep crossing our fingers and hoping that we stay as healthy as possible, which I know it's going to hit us. My goal is always to avoid the actual holidays because we've had the flu over Christmas. It's no fun. Don't recommend it.
That's a great goal. And I'm just going to be jealous of you because I'm pretty sure we're in like the toddler germ suck stage and it just is what it is. So yeah. My husband and I have kind of resigned to the fact that like we're going to be on and off sick until Cole builds up an immune system and there's nothing we can do about it. So here we are. I want to dive right in to these questions that we received on social media. By the way, I feel the need to mention that I had someone reach out to me on Instagram and she said, I don't have a question, but I just want you to know that I love your Q&A podcast episodes. So I hope people continue submitting questions. And I love that. Like, I love hearing that you guys are enjoying these episodes. I also want to say the only way we can keep doing these episodes is if someone submits questions. And I would love, and Coach Lauren would love for that someone to be you. So if you have a question, even if you think it's silly or it's been asked before, perhaps, or you feel vulnerable asking, we don't share your name. We're not saying that this is Lauren, three kids, who lives in St. Louis, asking this question about fiber supplements because she can't go to the bathroom regularly. We are not giving that kind of information out here. You remain completely anonymous. So if there's something that we can help you learn more about or just troubleshoot, we are here to do that. So please keep submitting your questions to us on social media.
Well, and you're never alone. Like, no one has like a unique struggle. I don't think your struggle is absolutely someone else's struggle as well. So ask away because you never know who you're going to help. And then if you get the answer for yourself and everybody wins, it's a win-win-win situation.
Exactly. And I do want to just disclaim, Lauren, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus. You, as per my knowledge, are not having trouble going to the bathroom, nor do you need a fiber supplement. But someone does, because the first question that we received was, what about fiber supplements? Are they a reasonable substitute for dietary fiber?
Are they a reasonable substitute for dietary fiber? I think my short answer is no. And obviously there's a much longer answer that goes along with that. If you are somebody who maybe does have some bathroom issues and you want to try experimenting with adding that in, that would not be my first line of defense in this situation. I would look at your dietary fiber intake, and that is going to be coming from plants, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, legumes, those kinds of foods is going to be where you're getting your fiber. If you are dramatically low on your plant food intake, I would start there because yes, fiber is a big part of the reason why plants are so good for our health, but it is not the only reason. You're not just getting fiber. You're getting antioxidants. You're getting phytonutrients. You're getting vitamins and minerals. All of those things are coming from really nutrient dense plant-based foods, and fiber is a part of that. If you're taking a fiber supplement, you're not getting all those additional benefits. That being said, if you are somebody who doesn't really have, who has a very low fiber intake currently, increase slowly to avoid any kind of digestion distress. If you go from 5 grams a day to 30, your tummy might not be super happy with you. So I would definitely recommend maybe just adding in one extra serving of those types of foods and ease yourself into it. If you can ideally get up to about 30 grams a day of dietary fiber, you are going to be sitting pretty. That's kind of the gold spot. Now, if that's just really not for you, or if a doctor is recommending these fiber supplements, or if maybe it's you have some occasional like irregularity or constipation or something and you want to use the fiber supplement, I would say, okay, as long as you're not relying on it to hit your fiber goals every single day and dismissing the fact that you do need plant-based foods in your diet for all of the other reasons that I just mentioned, all of the good things that are coming along with it, fiber being one of many benefits coming from plants. So if your plant intake is low, start there. If you need a fiber supplement, go for it. Just don't use it as a reason to not eat dietary fiber.
Yeah. This reminds me of like a greens supplement, which yes. I think we had a question on a while ago. Is it a good replacement for eating actual greens? No, it's not. It's the secondary choice if and only if you feel like it's necessary for you. But the ideal scenario would be you getting a substantial amount of fiber, gold standard, even sufficient amount of fiber, which as Lauren mentioned, 25 to 30 grams for women, even more for men. I mean, 30 to 40 grams a day is recommended. But can I share some sorrowing statistics with you?
Please. I mean, not that I'm excited, but yeah.
Did you know that Americans consume about 15 grams of fiber per day on average? And if we're talking just women, around 13.6 grams a day.
I have heard that 15 gram statistic before, and it's a little sad, guys. We need to get it higher than that.
I mean, if ideal standard is 25 to 30 grams, we are getting half of that. And here's why. So refined sugars, oils, dairy products, and alcohol contain no fiber, and they make up about 48% of the energy in the average American diet. So those things that I just mentioned, refined sugars, oils, dairy products, and alcohol, make up almost half of our diet, and they have no fiber. No wonder we're falling short.
Yeah, standard American diet, right? It's just, you know, lots of ultra-processed foods, very little plant-based foods, very little whole foods in general. 50% is a chunk. That's a big chunk of our diet.
I know. Here's something else that's really sad. White flour and white potatoes provide the most fiber in the American diet. It's not because these two things contain a lot of fiber. It's just because we eat a hell of a lot of these things. That is mind-blowing to me, because white flour and white potatoes, not packed with fiber. And yet they are the foods that we eat frequently, so frequently, in fact, that they're giving us the most fiber. So you already mentioned this, Lauren, but we need to do a better job of building our diet around vegetables, fruits, legumes, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. And if we do that, if that comprises the majority of what we eat most of the time, there's nothing wrong with white flour and white potatoes. There's nothing wrong with refined sugar, oils, dairy products, or alcohol. But if we have the majority of our diet built around veggies, fruits, legumes, whole grains, nuts, and seeds, we're probably crushing fiber consumption. And I think it's important and worth mentioning why fiber is so helpful. Yes, it helps with our plumbing, right? Keeps us going to the bathroom regularly, which is great, because I don't know about you, but if I'm not going to the bathroom regularly, I'm bloated and I don't feel good and my clothes are just uncomfortable and I'm cranky. Digestion is really, really important when it comes to like how we feel in our bodies and how we show up every day. But beyond that, a low fiber diet is associated with health complications like cardiovascular disease, GI disorders, cancers, and poor bowel function, diabetes, having excess body fat, and high blood pressure. So by making sure that I have enough fiber in my diet, it's easier for me to maintain and or manage my weight and also reduce my risk of all of these things that I just mentioned. So fiber gets a lot of hype and it's like, yeah, I need to eat fiber. I think sometimes it's just important to remember why.
I love that. And I have two follow-ups here. Number one, I want to jump to the defense of the potato. Can I defend the potato for a second?
Please defend the potato. Yes.
Because I believe, and I'm not looking it up right now, so I'm pretty positive that the reason the potato is most of our fiber is because of foods like chips and French fries, which when we're looking at those foods, are those super nutrient dense foods? No. They're fried, they're high caloric, low nutrient density foods. But if you prepare roasted potatoes, a baked potato with a little, you know, however you like to flavor it up, there it can actually be a really satiating part of your diet. It can be a great source of starchy carbs, starchy plants on your plate when prepared, not deep fried and smothered in butter and cheese. And I mean, sprinkle those things on, enjoy your potato, but do so with maybe some portion awareness when it comes to the toppings, and don't look at potatoes as chips and fries, and maybe think of them more as a, you know, roasted starch on the side, which can absolutely be part of a nutrient dense diet, health diet. I love the potato. They're also super cheap. You can turn them into a lot of things. My kids like them. So we do. I wanted to defend the humble potato for a second. I had to get that out there.
Yeah, thank you for that, because there is no such thing as a superfood. You and I have talked about that before. It's just a marketing term. But if there was a superfood, I think the potato should earn the title, because the potato can literally be turned into anything.
Anything.
It's
anything.
So versatile.
And it's delicious.
And so filling.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's number one on like the rankings of most satiating foods. And people are generally surprised to hear that. Most satiating foods, meaning you're getting a lot of bang for your buck, like calorie for calorie, it's going to fill you up more. And on the very low end of those foods would be things like chips and, you know, those very low nutrient foods. But in terms of satiety, you're going to feel the most satiated if you include potatoes in your diet. So had to defend those. I also wanted to share a few super easy ways to incorporate more plants into your diet. If you're sitting there thinking, okay, so how do I do this? Just some really easy ways. I like to add like chopped nuts or like chia or hemp seeds. Like I'll sprinkle them into cottage cheese or yogurt bowls. That's kind of a big go-to for me. You can add beans to your salads, like a half a cup of beans to a salad is a great way to boost fiber, or a wrap or something like that. Roasting vegetables. I posted this on Instagram the other day. If you aren't roasting your vegetables, you are missing out, because it is by far the best way to enjoy vegetables. You can roast like two huge pans for the week, throw them in, and then it's your side to everything. And then of course, fruit is one of the best snacks out there. Grab an apple, grab a banana. Berries are going to be the most fiber you can get in fruit. So about a cup of berries, any that you enjoy, add that to your diet. They're delicious. So it can be really easy. You can just like sprinkle seeds and nuts onto everything really that you eat, because they're all so good. And they add like a yummy little crunch and they get you a fiber boost, and then all the other benefits that come from eating those kinds of foods regularly. So it doesn't have to be, you don't have to go vegan, you don't have to go vegetarian. You can find really easy ways to just sprinkle in more plants into your diet, swapping out your white bread or even half of your white carbs for a whole grain fiber, you know, is going to be helpful there, a super easy swap. So keep it simple, start small, and don't think that you have to all of a sudden become like vegan to hit your fiber goals, because that's totally not necessary.
Yeah. I like to encourage clients that they can incorporate vegetables as a source of fiber, obviously. So if you're eating, let's say, three sources of veggies a day, give or take 4 to 5 grams of fiber per serving, per cup size serving, you're already at 15 grams, give or take. But then if every time you choose a carb, you're choosing a fiber containing carb, which around here we call a smart carb. So like we've talked about, the potato or a whole grain bread product, fruit, you're getting a couple grams of fiber there as well, potentially 3, 4. And then if you're healthy fat, we've talked about nuts and seeds, also avocados, very high in fiber. Yeah, if you're choosing a fat that also is fiber containing, unlike an oil or a butter or some type of sour cream or cheese, nothing wrong with those, but those do not contain fiber, you're also getting a couple extra grams. So between your smart carbs, your healthy fats, and your fruits and veggies, bam, 20, 25 grams, 30 grams, easy throughout the day. Like Lauren alluded to before, we wouldn't recommend jumping straight to that. Be nice to your tummy and maybe just gradually increase by a serving a day for a period of time. I also don't want to hate on fiber supplements. They exist for a reason. I have worked with a handful of clients who, for whatever reason, are struggling with IBS or gastroparesis, and they cannot have the skin on fruits and vegetables, which is where a lot of the fiber comes from. They, for whatever reason, just do not respond well to a high fiber diet, but their systems can tolerate a fiber supplement. Barring a medical complication like that, however, whole food fiber is going to be way more advantageous and highly recommended by us.
Well, and it just goes back to the basics. Like I say, every time we answer a question, it ends with just start from a place of a whole food based diet and you'll be good. You'll check the box that you're looking to check. If you, like you were, when you were going through all the fiber options, like it's all whole food based. If you prioritize those foods and sprinkle in the other foods, the more fun foods, you'll hit all of your health goals without even really having to think or track or anything like that. It just happens fairly naturally.
Speaking of other health goals, can I also throw in here that when you eat a lot of fiber, you also need to consume a lot of fluid. So fiber is great, but if you're not hydrated and you're eating a lot of fiber, you're going to feel like a blip. So like you need to be hydrating. So shoot for your fiber goal. Also, as a byproduct, you'll probably be more hydrated and therefore reach your big, powerful body composition goal a little easier.
Yeah. Fiber is great. To sum it all up.
Can't say enough good things about fiber. Okay. Moving on. Second question. What nutrition changes do I need to make during perimenopause or menopause?
Whew. I just saw somebody else post how much horrific information is out there surrounding this time of life for women. And it's sad because it's a hard enough, stressful enough kind of new time of life to navigate anyway. Let's not throw in a bunch of misinformation that's going to make our lives harder. So what dietary changes would I make? That depends on the person. If you're coming to us and you have a mainly whole foods based diet, and maybe you're just struggling with a little unwanted, you know, belly fat gain, which is pretty common, the rules still apply. Perimenopause, menopause, young people, the rules still apply when it comes to weight management. It's going to be energy in versus energy out. I would do what I do with all my clients and myself is build a diet around whole foods, focusing on protein, focusing on fiber. I would strongly encourage this person, if they are not already, to incorporate strength training into their movement routine to build muscle and focus on maintaining muscle. Even if they're not going to focus on like getting really, really strong, just keeping the muscle that they have, it's going to help support a healthy metabolism. It's going to help them feel better. It's going to help them deal with those aches and pains that maybe are coming along with just aging in general. So there isn't a ton to do differently. I think the number one thing to do differently is to maybe set expectations appropriately, because you aren't 20 and that's okay. You don't have to look like a 20-year-old. You can just understand that maybe the goal should be to feel your best, to have energy, to manage any perimenopausal symptoms that you're having, and support that with really quality lifestyle choices, like really quality food choices, hitting your protein goal, strength training as, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. It doesn't have to be every day for hours on end. You don't have to be throwing around heavy weights, but just incorporating some kind of strength training into your routine and focusing less on getting down to a certain size or seeing certain progress on the scale and more on how can I feel really good? How can I support my health right now? How can I keep my bone density strong? How can I build this muscle to make myself feel better, to support my metabolism? And yeah, otherwise just stick to the basics, like we say time and time again, and just accept that it's a different phase of life and expectations might be a little different. The end goal might be a little different than it was before.
Yeah. Changing your body composition goal from I want to look as svelte as possible to I want to feel really great and have stable energy. And also, this isn't something we often think about, but I want to keep my bones really strong.
Yeah.
Something that tends to happen, especially in the female population, as we age and go through perimenopause and menopause, is that we start to lose bone density. And as someone who has destroyed her bone density early on in her life, I want to just relay to you, it is not fun to be experiencing stress fractures and, you know, bone breaks and things like that because of something that you can help to prevent. So the only thing that I would add to what you've already said, Lauren, is making sure that you're also incorporating some calcium-rich foods, which are predominantly whole food sources, right? Like yogurt is high in calcium, as well as nuts and seeds, things like beans and lentils, leafy greens. So spinach gets, you know, a good rep in terms of being high in calcium, things like salmon, rhubarb, surprisingly, kale, bok choy, things like that. So if your diet consists largely of whole foods and you're incorporating plants and you're maintaining a good amount of protein, chances are you're going to be just fine, but I wouldn't skimp on those things. So oftentimes when we're going through perimenopause and menopause, the scale becomes a little wonky, right? Hormones are all over the place and we can't necessarily control the number on the scale. We can't control the number on the scale ever, but we don't have as much influence over exactly what that number says when our body is going through these changes. And so oftentimes it's way more helpful to focus on what can I incorporate in my diet? What can I make sure I'm eating enough of versus what our instinct might be, which is what can I cut out? Because the scale isn't responding like it used to. So let me eat less. Let me eliminate these things. I would encourage you to focus on nutrition by addition during the season and the addition of strength training if you're not already, versus how can I eat as little as possible? Because that's not supporting your energy level. It's not supporting your bone health. It's not supporting your mental health either, but that's another conversation for another day.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do feel like that age of women sometimes, because they grew up in the Weight Watchers, Atkins diet culture bullshit of the 90s, their response is to how little can I eat? I'm gaining some weight in my stomach area. My clothes aren't fitting as comfortably as they used to. I have to eat less. And that is, to me, maybe the one of the worst moves you can do, because we need to support what your body is going through. We need to support your hormone health. We need to support your muscle growth and your bone density, all the things you just mentioned. And you do that with proper nutrition. That has to be the priority here, in my opinion, proper nutrition combined with strength training. We've both mentioned it 1,000 times because I think we know how important it is during that phase of life. But don't jump to, I have to lose this weight because I'm up 5 or 10 pounds. Maybe take a break from the scale and just instead focus on feeling really good. Like I was saying, like, just maybe have different goals and expectations going into it. And that is not to say you're doomed to gain weight. You're unable to lose body fat during this time of life. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying, for the person out there who's maybe just feeling like they're a little bit, like, quote, fluffy or bloated or things like that, maybe that could be a good time to set that goal down of weight loss and focus more on getting strong and feeling good.
This is going to sound counterintuitive to what I just said, because I was focusing on nutrition by addition. I also, hearing you talk, was thinking about another tactic that we can utilize to help us feel our best in terms of menopause symptoms, like hot flashes and feeling a little extra puffy and bloated, is reducing our caffeine and our alcohol consumption. This is something that we can always experiment with, but especially during perimenopause and menopause, caffeine and alcohol tend to trigger some of those things, like hot flashes, like not feeling super great in our body. So that would be something where, again, you don't have to eliminate it entirely, but think about reducing.
And like you said, alcohol, reducing your alcohol intake will literally always benefit you. So we could just put that out there. If you're somebody who regularly relaxes with a glass of wine, or, you know, has a few glasses every, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, that is a good place to start too. Like, okay, maybe I can cut back on this, not cut out, but cut back and just experiment and see how you feel without it or with less.
Yeah, that's something I love encouraging clients to do, is like, hey, let's treat this like an experiment. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little less for 2 weeks. If after you don't feel any better, cool. You can go back to doing things exactly the way that you were and add everything back in. All I ask is that you collect some honest feedback. There's so much less pressure that way, as opposed to feeling like, I have to cut this out forever. Only if it benefits you. Only if you decide the pros outweigh the cons. If they don't do it.
Well, and approaching it like an experiment takes away that all or nothing, like I have failed type of feeling. Like if you have a little bit here and there, it's just an experiment, right? Did you feel better or did you not? There was no pressure. There was no goal to never have another glass of wine again. That wasn't the goal. The goal was to cut out or cut back for a few weeks and see how you feel. No pressure.
Okay. You mentioned the scale, like getting rid of the scale. And that ties nicely into our third and final question, because this is a doozy. And that question is, do I have to use the scale if I have a weight loss goal?
No, you do not have to use the scale if you have a weight loss goal. You can. It can be, I always like to say, it is one tool in the toolbox. That's it. It's not the most important. It's not the only one in there. We've been conditioned to believe it is the most important. And we've been conditioned to believe that that is how we measure fat loss progress. But you do not have to use it. If you don't want to, maybe it's triggering for you coming from, you know, a history of dieting or yo-yo dieting. Maybe you just don't feel comfortable with that number. You don't have to use it. I would highly encourage you to measure your progress in some way. If fat loss is the goal, you can do that with clothes. How are your clothes fitting? Body measurements. Are you losing inches every month? And look at it, you know, just measure your progress in some way, because what does not get measured will not get managed. We need to know that we're making some kind of progress towards a goal. But the scale does not have to be a part of it if you don't want it to be a part of it. And if it's causing you, if you're having a really hard time detaching your emotions from the scale, I would recommend you taking at least a break from it. Kind of like we were just saying, it doesn't mean you can never step on the scale again. Let's take a break from it. Focus on your actions, your behaviors that are ultimately driving the number on the scale anyway. Let's get some really strong consistency with goal supportive behaviors. We don't need the scale to tell us whether or not we're doing that. The scale isn't going to tell you if you hit your protein goal that day. The scale isn't going to tell you if you hit your veggie goal that day, if you got your steps in, if you drank your water. The scale isn't going to tell you any of that directly. So focusing on the behaviors and the actions that are getting you to your goal, measuring your progress in other ways, whatever you feel comfortable with, it's clothing, fit, or measurements are kind of the two most common ones, I'd say. And you don't have to use a scale if you really struggle to kind of detach emotion from it. I know a lot of people, they get on the scale and if it's higher than they want it to be, maybe they feel like nothing is working and they quit, or they're a failure, or what's the point in even trying? And then if it's lower, they might feel like, ooh, it's working and I'm going to treat myself now because I deserve it. So there could be a lot of self-sabotage that comes along with the scale. That being said, I'm not anti-scale either. If you're somebody who benefits from using the scale, go for it. Just know you do not have to have it be a part of your fat loss journey. You can still see a lot of success measuring in other ways.
100%. The scale is easy to use. It's right there. You can step on it as frequently as you want to, or as infrequently as you want to. And it is accessible to most of us. That's why I think it's touted as being kind of the most popular metric to use. But that being said, it can come with a lot of trauma. I want to share a client story with you. Is that cool?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I have a client and we're going to call her, I don't know, what should we call her? Annika. I don't know where that name came from. That's not her name. We're keeping her anonymous here. But Annika has a history of Weight Watchers. And if you know anything about Weight Watchers, you may know that you have to weigh in order to be held accountable. And there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. You have weigh-in day. And I have clients that would tell me, you know, before weigh-in day, they would make sure that they were wearing the least amount of clothes possible, right? They'd leave their underwear off at home because God forbid it added 2 ounces to their weigh-in. They would take their hair tie off their wrist. They would make sure like they weren't wearing any jewelry, all of this, because you're weighing in a public place and there's lots of shame associated with weigh-ins. So anyway, Annika started coaching and she said, I want to live in a healthier, leaner body. I don't want to weigh in. And I was like, cool, we don't have to do that. Let's find other metrics that we can use to track and measure your progress. Annika has now been working with me for 5.5 months. Guess what? This week, she celebrated being down 27.5 inches.
That is bonkers. That's insane progress.
Over 2 rulers.
I mean, congratulations to Annika. I think that, and I know that's not her name, but I am so proud of her. And that's insane. That's incredible.
Every check-in that we've had, she has celebrated some sort of progress and she hasn't needed the scale to know that she's making progress. She's said things like, I actually think my face is looking a little thinner. I'm noticing that when I look in the mirror. The other day, she told me that her shoulders and her neck are looking different as she's strength training, which is really exciting to her. She's noticing that the weights that she's able to choose have gone up, which is an amazing progress indicator. She's also tracking energy level and clothing fit. We actually had to pick a new pair of pants that we're using to measure her fit because she already fit in one pair that she couldn't fit in when she started. So I was like, all right, girlfriend, we need another pair of pants. Find something else that doesn't fit. And now there was 3 inches between the button and the buttonhole. Here we are. She can now get them buttoned. She can't wear them out comfortably yet, but we're going to get there. So all that to say, this rock star has made amazing progress over the last 5.5 months, hasn't stepped on the scale once. She has no idea how much she weighs. I have no idea how much she weighs. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all because she's looking, feeling, and performing more like how she wants to. And we know definitively progress is being made. Fuck the scale.
I have to share a client win just hearing you brag about yours. Just the other night, I had a client, and I'll be honest, this client is using the scale, but it has been some slow and steady progress over a couple months working together. And that's something, a conversation we've had regularly, just reminding herself, you know, I have to remind myself I'm in it for health. I have to remind myself this isn't a fad diet. She told me she went shopping the other day and she tried on 3 pairs of jeans. And she goes, they all fit. She said that's never happened. She usually is left with one pair that fits and the other ones don't fit. So she has to kind of by default get the one pair, whether or not it was what she really wanted. And she said she had options. She was so excited to tell me. And I said, how do you feel in those jeans? And she said, I feel really good in those jeans. And she was so proud and excited. So even though the scale is going down, we're seeing some progress there. We're seeing progress in her inches. We're seeing some confidence grow. We're seeing her habits and her actions like just get so consistent and dialed in. And it is showing with body composition changes. And I was just so excited for her. Like, what a fun win. Like, yeah, you get to go into a store and try on jeans and have options because you can fit into them comfortably.
And if for whatever reason she had stepped on the scale that morning and saw that she was up a couple of pounds because, I don't know, water weight, or maybe she wasn't eating enough fiber the previous few days, so she was constipated, to take us back to the first part of our conversation, she probably wouldn't have even gone in the store to try on the jeans and then celebrated that huge win. And again, we're not anti-scale. In fact, full transparency, most of our clients do use the scale as one of several metrics they're using to track their progress. But the disclaimer that we use is if stepping on the scale makes you feel less than as a person, if it causes you to just completely tank your entire mood and it ruins your day because it didn't go the direction that you hoped that it would go, we're not at a place where we can use that as objective data and helpful feedback. And that's fine because there's so many other metrics we can utilize, but we want to make sure that our clients have a healthy relationship with the scale if they are going to use it to measure progress. But to answer this person's question, nope. It all depends on how you feel about the scale and whether there are other metrics that could potentially measure the progress you want to make more helpfully or more accurately.
The cool thing about the whole health, nutrition, you know, kind of world and your own personal journey is that you get to pick and choose what works for you and set down the rest. You don't have to do it all. You don't have to do what other people are doing. You get to pick. Is this helpful to me? Is it benefiting me in some way? Is it benefiting my journey in some way? And if not, you don't have to use it. And quick plug here, this is why having a coach is so helpful, because they can help you kind of work through all the like trends and all the information that is just bombarding you and help you see what does work for you. What is benefiting you? Is the scale helping you or is it sabotaging you? You get to choose. You are in control. You have that power. So don't feel like you have to do things a certain way because other people on social media or family or friends or coworkers, whatever, are doing it a certain way. If you are noticing that a behavior or an action is just not benefiting you, you can set it down. You don't have to do it.
This is the beauty of personalized or individualized nutrition coaching. Unlike something where it's like, nope, here's how this works. Here's what we use to measure progress. Here's what you have to eat. Here's what you can't eat. Those cookie cutter type approaches don't work. And this is an exact reason why. Not everyone needs the same metrics. Not everyone is going to respond to the same nutrition strategies in the same way. We need to figure out what works for you, what makes sense for your brain, what works best for your body, and run with that.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, Lauren, we're going to wrap up with another podcast review. Can I share this one with
you? Yes, I love these.
Yay! My weekly fave. My week is not complete without this podcast. I always look forward to reliable information, great mindset hacks, a little sass, and a fun to listen to, highly informative podcast. I have recommended it to more than any other to my friends, family, and even some of my patients.
Oh, that's so nice. It is funny because it feels like a conversation with like just such a good friend of mine. Like, and then I forget that other people hear it.
I know. It's so true. Yeah. And I'm glad that people can hear it because, I mean, essentially what we're sharing here is a deep dive into things that we talk with on a daily basis to our coaching clients about. I mean, these are things that real people are navigating, and to have someone help dissect what the evidence says and what the research says. And also, how do we factor individuality to all of that? Because anecdotal evidence, like what works in your life and what works for your body, matters more than anything else. So it's just so helpful to be able to listen in or submit a question and have it answered by someone other than just your own thoughts. Because sometimes that can feel really, really lonely and just convoluting.
And confusing and overwhelming. It's like, what do I do? What's going on?
All right. We will catch you on the flip side, squad. If you have a question, please send us a DM. Let us know. Remember, you are not the only one with that question. So if you want something answered about nutrition or why you're struggling to lose body fat and keep it off or mindset hacks, we are here to help you.
Always.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.